Hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into yet another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Nessler, and that was Aaron Cam and the One Drops, whom you just heard on Eric's show just a few minutes ago. That was The Bomb and the Beast, and that's what you'll hear tonight if you skank on over to The Temporary in Willits. It's hard to imagine the theater without fraught family dynamics. It's a subject everyone can relate to, and it's fertile ground for playwrights and actors. Acclaimed playwright Arthur Miller was an expert at dramatizing family foibles, and even his lesser-known plays are devastatingly eloquent in capturing that dynamic. His 1968 play, The Price, as I discovered, is just as rich and compelling as Death of a Salesman. I spoke with the director and two of the actors in the Thunder River Theater's production of this play earlier this week.
Decarbondalized right now.
You adopted the Aspen costume. What's the Carbondale costume?
You're wearing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but you guys aren't.
I'm always in black. This was the only clean sweater I had.
Okay. Let's just say it does not involve a button-down shirt under a sweater.
So you're going against type then.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
You would expect that.
Yeah.
Right?
Although, yeah, anyway.
Okay, I think we're good. Corey Simpson joins the program now. Hi, Corey.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Owen O'Farrell is here, too.
Nice to see you.
And Bob Moore.
Hello, Luke. Good to see you.
Dearly beloved, we gather together to praise The Price.
Yes.
I like that.
Arthur Miller. But not the Arthur Miller play or one of what? It's not one of his greater known plays, is it?
It's not. It's not like The Crucible or Death of a Salesman. So lesser known, yeah.
Huh. Why did you choose this one? Did you choose that, Corey?
I did choose it, yeah. So I was really looking to fill a slot in our season back a year and a half ago when I was planning the season. That was one of our great American playwrights. So I was looking at O'Neill, I was looking at Miller, you know, the big ones. And I was also looking to fill a slot that had fewer actors in it, because obviously there's more cost involved with that, and wanted something that would feel very intimate and in line with what we do at Thunder River. And actually, I was talking with Lon, the founder of our theater, about some ideas, and he said, you know, have you ever considered reading The Price? And he hadn't read it in a long time, but I picked it up, and right away, what jumped out at me were these incredible, timely themes and truths that seemed as present for us now as they might have been back in 1968 when this first was on stage. And it was almost an immediate, yes, this is the right play for us right now.
Huh, how about that? Well, Arthur Miller specializes in father-son dynamics, would you say?
Father-son and also sort of the typical American family unit dynamics he's really well known for as well.
Yeah, endlessly fascinating, endlessly complex.
Endlessly hilarious and terrifying.
There's hilarity in The Price.
I'll let those
well,
two say,
yes,
yeah.
Luke, because I'm in it.
I needn't have asked. So you're the comic relief. Bob.
You know, Corey and I had a good conversation about that when we had our table read, because I asked him point blank. I said, you know, Corey, I'm not quite sure why my character, who is Gregory Solomon, the furniture dealer, is in the play. But we came to some pretty good conclusions that there's a good reason that Miller put him in, and maybe some of the comic relief is part of that, but his character is much more complex than that.
So he enlivens the dynamic between the brothers?
Yes. Yes, he does.
And how does he do that?
Well, in such a way that I think he opens the eyes of Victor, probably more so than Walter, to the fact that the furniture, which I think represents a part of the big conflict between the two brothers, he gives Victor a better way to look at what it represents. I believe that's my interpretation of it. Now, Corey's probably going to say, Bob, you don't know what the heck you're talking about.
Well, Solomon, in some ways, is a kind-hearted rabble-rouser And for those of you that don't know Bob Moore, you might think that's typecasting. Bob's a great guy. No, he was the perfect person for this role. And like he said, he has this great sense of comedy. And I think the character of Solomon is able to really read situations well to play them to his advantage. And so Bob does a great job of that in the show.
Well, Owen, let's talk about your character, Victor, one of the sons.
That is correct.
Brothers, one of the brothers. You're the brother that stayed behind and took care of the father.
That is absolutely correct, yep.
And as a result, you harbor a lot of resentments?
I suppose to a certain extent. But I think that Victor himself has actually resigned himself to the fact that he did what he had to do to keep the family together and to make sure that Dad was okay. And that's pretty much the basis of his character. Now, all this furniture kind of represents the fact that this is his past, and he didn't get to do what he really wanted to do in his life. He had to give that up to take care of Dad. So it's a kind of a two different things. He did what he had to do, but it was also a bit of an excuse for not getting out there and doing what he really wanted to do, which was science. But he had to drop out of school to take care of Dad after the crash of 1929.
But his brother, your brother, did.
He did. He went on ahead and became a doctor and a very good scientist and made a lot of money. But he abandoned the family, in Victor's opinion. Uh-huh. He left his responsibility elsewhere, and he went on to do what he wanted to do at everybody else's cost.
So is there a lot of bellowing and moaning between you two?
I'd say there was a little bit of bellowing. Yeah, this is an emotional roller coaster, this play. Yeah, it's you can't get ahead of yourself or you're going to lose the audience. But there is a lot of intensity, to say the very least.
Huh, interesting. You know, family dynamics are endlessly fascinating. And it's certainly been a subject for theater for millennia. I mean, going back to the Greek tragedies, even. What is it? What kind of twist does Arthur Miller put on it, on that, in this play?
So you just mentioned the Greeks. And actually, there's this stunning and beautiful moment at the end that's spoken by Treri, who's another one of our actors in the play. And Miller introduces this idea of forgiveness. And there's this beautiful moment at the end where she asks, why is it so hard for us to forgive one another? We're just one simple step away from that. And I think that's an important aspect of living with family. And we're not all the same, even though we come from the same families. And so Miller finds a way to weave that in.
Unlike some of his other plays. I mean, it was there's some resolution is what I'm hearing you say.
I'm not going to tell you the ending, and I'm not promising that there's resolution.
Okay. But there's the potential.
The potential is absolutely there.
Uh-huh. Huh. How does that look to your eyes, Owen, as one of the brothers?
Well, it's kind of interesting because in this play, until the play begins, Victor has not spoken to Walter in 16 years. I personally haven't spoken to my brother in 20. So there's definitely a family dynamic that is universal or can definitely be keyed into certain families, and that's one of them for us. Uh-huh. So it's a really interesting play for me to be in and made me think about a lot of things as a result in my own family life.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's interesting. So that's how you approached your character, was through that.
Well, actually, one of the first rehearsals, I told them to keep your eye on me because it's got to be about Walter and Victor, not Owen and Jimmy. So just keep me from getting too far into that part, and let's stay in the play.
Okay.
But it definitely influences the thoughts behind the lines and behind the words.
Uh-huh. Is this one of his... Is the writing as powerful in this one as it is in some of the others that he did? It is?
Oh, yeah. It's an amazingly powerful play.
Huh. Tell me more. How is it?
Oh, it touched every single line is written with four or five different possible readings to it. It really, the more you read it, the deeper it gets, and the more universal it gets, which kind of amazes me, because I've read this thing at least 150, 200 times. And every single time I read it, I find something new, like I did this morning. I was looking at the script this morning, and I found new ways to look at certain lines. And, I mean, that's the
that's a greatness right there. You can tell that. When you just keep getting more and more every time you go back. Like Shakespeare. The more you read Shakespeare, the older you get, the more you get. Same with Miller.
Why is it... Oh, go ahead, Corey.
This piece walks a really fine tightrope because while it's a drama, there is so much comedy in it as well. And so we've talked a lot as a cast about how it in particular really takes this roller coaster ride where one moment the audience is laughing and then the next minute there's a devastation that's happening for a character. So it's definitely a masterful work in that way.
Why is it considered one of his lesser known works then?
Because I'm curious what Bob has to say. I have my ideas about it too, but...
Actually, Corey and I did discuss this just a little bit, Luke, but I think... This is simply my perspective. Do I claim to be an Arthur Miller, critique or critic? No, I don't claim to be. But there are certain. I think one of the reasons it's not produced that often is number one, it is a long play. Probably with intermission and everything. It's probably 2.5 hours, pretty close to 2.5 hours, and that's 2.5 hours of, like Corey said, a roller coaster ride and. Some audiences are up for that, some aren't. My critique of the play is, from my reading of it, I think it could be just a little bit overwritten. I think Miller could have gotten the main points that he wanted to get across with the characters and with the meaning of the play with a little bit fewer words. So that's my critique of the piece.
The thing that I think we've been discovering through the rehearsal process is... How dense and meaty this piece is, and I've really come to understand why it has been revived 4 times on Broadway. It's had 4 revivals,
including last year.
Yeah, that's right, with Danny DeVito.
Uh huh.
Yeah, so it is a tremendous piece. I think it's just one of those situations where Miller is so brilliant. How do you judge not quite as brilliant versus the most brilliant? And I think. This one just wasn't as well recognized.
Yeah, and I just think it's recognition more than brilliancy because it's every bit, for me, as an actor being able to do it. I had the wonderful opportunity to do Joe Keller in All My Sons, which is one of my favorite plays that Miller ever did. And this one is every bit as meaty as that one is. So it's just, it's a different kind of play. And why it isn't produced, that's a hard question to answer.
The audience reaction has been very interesting as well. First night, we got a big standing ovation, which is always a thrill as an actor. And coming out and talking in the lobby afterward, I have had so many audience members say, wow, thank you so much for choosing this piece because it's not a Miller that we're familiar with. A lot of people that love theater, they've read Death of a Salesman, they're familiar with it. Whereas I feel like part of my job as artistic director and for us as an artistic community is to introduce people to pieces that they don't know, new influences. And the audience is really, I've been expressing thanks for that.
Why are family dynamics so fraught? You'd think after millennia, we'd have it solved by now. And yet this play proves that we haven't.
Luke, you just pinpointed why this piece felt so relevant for right now. Because when it was produced in 1968, it felt fresh and new. And now this piece is much older, and we're still seeing as an audience that we're repeating these same mistakes. It's that reminder that we need to have. So I'm not necessarily giving you an answer, but it does... You got right to the heart of why this piece is such a great piece for our time.
So it gets at basic flaws in human character, is what you're telling me.
Mm-hmm. Another theme that's in here, too, that's a beautiful thing to be reminded of is we have to follow our dreams. We can't give up on what our heart tells us to do. And that is definitely a through line in this play as well.
Huh. Interesting.
And I would add to that not only Corey's comment about following our dreams, but there is a certain pride and a certain necessity in doing a good job and being proud of that, even though it might not be exactly what you wanted to do in your life.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Which is, I would say, probably a modern take on it.
Yeah.
Looking for fulfillment where you can. Did Victor find some fulfillment?
Well, that's I think you'd have to come see the play to find out, to be honest with you. But Victor came to a realization that he did what he had to do, and he is happy with that at the end of the play. And even though he didn't go on to do what he originally wanted to do, he took care of business the way he thinks a real man should. Mm-hmm. And he does come to a conclusion that way.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the extraneous parts of it. For instance, the blocking or the set. Tell me about the set.
Wow. You asked a great question, and I would love for the actors to talk about that with this process that we just had. It was really interesting.
Tell me more.
Well, the set leads to meandering. No, I don't. No, it's a little different because we're in three-quarter round. So we have audience on three different sides of the stage, which presents a bit of a challenge, to say the very least, because you're not in a proscenium arch and everybody's not getting the same view. So you have to be aware of where everybody else is sitting and direct the movement pattern so that we are not blocking out somebody during a key moment and we are continuously trying to open it up to everybody, which sometimes goes against what the words themselves are saying. So sometimes you have to kind of lean away from somebody while you're saying something that you would say dead center to their face. So you have to find a new motivation to deliver that line so that it opens up for the audience. So it has been a challenge, to say the least.
We also started off the rehearsal process with one layout that we completely changed after 1 week of rehearsal. We said, you know what, this is too difficult. We're going to get something much more interesting and vibrant if we make these big shifts, which we did. And I think the payoff has been great, but it was definitely an exciting process getting there.
Oh, so you discovered that in the process of rehearsal.
That's right.
Huh.
I would like to say a nice shout out to Habitat for Humanity because they donated a tremendous amount of furniture. I mean, you come to the theater and you see the set. There is furniture everywhere, and it has to be that way because that's what the play is all about. The furniture is almost another character in the piece.
Yeah, and Scott Gilbert was so great and generous about helping us do that. So definitely thanks, Bob, for that.
So you mentioned it's another character. I was going to say, is it a metaphor, the furniture? Mm-hmm. But you're saying it's a character.
I don't know, Corey, you might have to answer that one. I don't like to, explain words I can't spell.
Luke, this is one of the reasons I love doing interviews with you, is you're so good at putting your finger on the pulse of a piece, and you're exactly right that furniture is a metaphor for the history that we hold behind us. The attic also serves as a metaphor. Attics are places where we store things, where we hide things away, where we have all our old dusty history stored away. And that's where this piece takes place, is in the attic where the family's history, their furniture, has all been in storage for years and years. So yes, it's definitely a metaphor.
And speaking of family dynamics, my grandfather's dining room table is center stage. Upstage center, which really, I love that. I'd love bringing that into
that
stuff like
really
that.
Cool. Yeah.
How do you feel about Bob pounding on that, by the way?
My grandfather's pounded on a lot more.
Yeah, who knows what happened at that table, which I suppose is sort of the point.
That's right.
Huh. But I noticed that the furniture's in the attic and not in the basement.
There's a part of the story that maybe one of them wants to tell you.
Yeah, my father lost everything after the crash of 29, and my uncles took over the building, but they let him keep the attic and live in the attic, which is another little piece of Arthur Miller. That's the only mention of the uncles. So you're left to decide, what does that mean?
Huh. There is a bit of an autobiographical nature to the piece. It's not exactly Arthur Miller's life, but his parents did go through the 1929 crash. And actually, he has a brother. Arthur Miller had a brother. And Arthur Miller was the one that, in this case, went on to become the famous one. But there are some similarities that are built into the piece.
Hmm. I don't know if it was the Broadway revival. It might have been the L.A. production. But I noticed that in that production, they had an empty chair on stage symbolizing the absent father. Do you do the same?
We do have an empty chair. Huh. And also, there's a representation of the mother as well, which in the play is written in as a harp.
A harpy, you mean?
An actual harp. Like you play. Oh, yes. The mother is not represented as a harpy.
Okay.
That would be my wife.
In our case, we're representing her with a piano, which is sort of a stand-in instrument in this case. But both parents are represented.
I think we've touched everything we need to touch. Does it feel that way to you?
Sure. Can we say the dates?
Yes, please.
All right, is it okay to say our number too?
It is okay, but we can't talk about price.
Got it.
So,
well, we've been talking about the price.
Yeah. Whoa. Whoa, look, so even the title isn't better.
We're not allowed to talk about the play at all.
Is the price right, Bob Moore?
No, I think it is. Yeah.
The price is right.
Just right.
Well, we're talking because you've already had opening night and a couple of performances. You've got some scheduled this coming weekend and after that, too. Tell me more.
We do. We perform this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And then our final weekend is that Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the 8th, 9th, and 10th. And tickets are available on our website at thunderrivertheater.com, or you can call the theater at 970-963-8200.
Well, and while I have you here, Corey, what do we have to look forward to at Thunder River Theater over the next several months?
Sure. So we actually have a lot coming up. We have another consensual improv performance coming up in March. We have a diva cabaret with Nina Gabbianelli and five other people, together with David Dyer on the keys. And then we have the fourth production of our season coming up. So we have a lot coming down the pipeline.
That sounds great.
All that's on our website.
You're staying busy. Corey Simpson, thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much for having us, Luke.
Owen O'Farrell, thank you.
Very nice to meet you.
And Bob Moore.
My pleasure, Luke. Thanks.
Again, you can learn more at thunderrivertheater.com. Stay with me. Jackson Emmer, up next.
Sit around and watch the days go by. Between computer screens, you're living things. One to see the sign upon the bathroom stall. I said it burning, baby. I burned it down. I need it, girl. No way I can perform it. Is your future looking stormy? Do you need a friend? I try to find home. So please take my hand. But you see, I'm feeling lonely, lonely. Like everyone else. Watch the flames. Stretch up the curtains, baby. Wishing I had some warm room. She was me. Always been a dreamer. When the keys are on my fingers, God bless you. God bless you. Yeah.
everyone else.
That's Joe Hertler and the Rainbow Seekers with their tune Lonely. They play Steve's Guitars next Thursday, March 8th. A soul band with horns coming to Carbondale on a Thursday night? Oh my God, that's something that we can't blame on Donald Trump, is it? Well, happy First Friday, everybody. Art and film at the Launchpad, a new exhibit at Carbondale Clay, handmade cups paired with handmade beverages, live music in four different venues tonight in our town, live theater at Thunder River. You can't find something to do. You are dead, my friend. I hate to tell you. And everybody's looking forward to the fashion show next week. Life is good, isn't it? Well, local singer-songwriter Jackson Emmer is no stranger to Express Yourself. I didn't find the time to plow through the archives and see how many times Jackson has played on KDNK or on this very program, but you might by now need two hands to do that. This time around, he brings a new CD with him that is leaps and bounds above what we've heard before from him. Jackson joins the show now to play a few tunes and talk about the CD before his gig tonight at Steve's Guitars. Jackson Emmer, welcome.
Luke, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
You're so welcome.
I'd also like to point out Lester Price is here to my left.
Yes, I was also going to say hello, Lester. Good to see you.
Hey, Luke.
The silent Buddha over there, ready to provide some tasty guitar fills.
Yeah, the man can play.
He can, there's no doubt about it. So, this new CD, I'm very happy to hear it. I would say it's really great. I have to listen to it again, and I hope I have to listen to it again and again.
That's so kind of you. Thanks for listening to it. Yeah, I'm excited. It comes out April 27th, so it's just in pre-release right now. And I'm excited about it.
What are you excited about? What is it? Does it feel as good to you as it apparently does to a first time listener?
I am proud of every note on that record, and that's a special way to feel. That's a rare feeling. I think, I record a lot of music and I'll share it with people, and sometimes it's magic and sometimes it's not, but I believe in every note on that record. So I'm really excited to share it with people.
We were talking off air beforehand. You said that this is the sixth take of this album?
Yeah, I recorded it four times at home, just like these acoustic versions of it. And I was going, it's not right, it's not quite right. And then I worked at a studio a friend of mine has in Asheville, North Carolina, where I was living at the time. And we did a whole nother version of it. And, that was good, but still not quite right. And so I went back to my house and invited some friends over, and we made this, and it turned out right.
Huh. What do you like about it?
Well, as an artist and a songwriter, I'm always trying to get closer to like making something that feels so much like me that it can't be mistaken with anybody else's thing. And I think I'm as close to that as I've ever been. The songs feel honest. They move me when I listen to them. They move me when I play them. And it feels most like being myself, when I'm listening to it and playing it. So that's the note I'm trying to strike. And hopefully I'm just getting closer to that as an artist.
I'm hearing a world weariness in your voice that I haven't heard before. Is that because you're getting older or wiser or both?
Probably dehydrated. I just love drinking coffee. I try to keep up with the water, but we played a 3-hour show last night down in Telluride. And one thing I hadn't thought about when I started playing so many shows is that you also just talk all day and night to people. So, yeah, your voice gets a little whooped.
But it adds a certain gravitas.
Gravitas.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Lester is smirking. I don't think he agrees. Either that or he knows better.
He's just like, don't suck over there. Take a nap. Drink some water. Have a lozenge, kid.
Well, I would say that your lyrics have advanced to the point where there's almost not a wasted word.
That's kind of you to say.
That's a great thing to have accomplished.
Yeah, well, thank you. I am nitpicky about syllables. and trying to get better at that every day.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
How do I try to get better at being nitpicky about syllables?
Uh-huh.
For me, I write music and lyrics at the same time. I don't try to marry them later. So I know immediately whether or not something is fitting or not. That's just what has been working for me. Lots of other folks do it other ways.
Sure.
And I used to think it was kind of like writing poetry or writing music, and they're separate and you kind of smash them together. But I think there's wasted space in that and some debris. So by making them at the same time, I'm trying to get rid of the debris.
Huh. Do you write a lot? Are you always writing songs?
I'm usually always writing songs.
Really?
I just took a break, as we talked about a little earlier. I took a break for like a month and a half. But normally I write almost every day, 4 or 5 days a week, typically. And I'll write, in a good week, 3 or 4 songs. It just depends, though. I kind of have ups and downs with how much I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just love doing it. I love sitting there and making stuff up. Or sometimes it comes to you when you're not trying, which is always really special. But we were talking last night about this, about how I kind of have to like crack the window for the muse to come in. Is that what? Yes. It's a Lesterism. So I sit down and I try, to write something, and generally it's garbage for 20 or 30 minutes, and that's like a page or a song and a half, and then I'll kind of hit a flow and be making something that works for another hour or so.
Well, you both have your guitars. I'd love to hear a tune or two, please.
Okay, yeah, let's play the title track off the upcoming record. It's called Jukebox.
Sounds good.
Cool.
Jackson Emmer, Lester Price, right here on Express Yourself.
Miss the old days with a jukebox on. Plastic buttons play your favorite songs. Nostalgia is here to stay. The world was sweet yesterday. Atari, Mario. Wasted days, oh how the time would go. What a shame, what a shame. The old folks say we used to have some fun back in the good old days. Do you remember passing time? Do you remember what you could get for a dime? Now many moons have come around since first I heard the juke sound. Fall in love or change the world, sparked by the juke giving records a twirl. Hot guitar! Traveled far, traveled wide, still never had a boss I liked. I kick my feet up at the end of the day, I listen to the songs that jukebox play. I miss the old days with a jukebox on. Plastic buttons play your favorite songs. Nostalgia
is here to stay. The world was sweet yesterday. Yeah. There it is, there it is.
The world was sweet yesterday, but that's a sweet song today.
Thanks, Luke.
Nice.
That's kind of you.
Nice. I like that one.
That one I wrote a couple years ago, actually, and stuffed it in the garbage pile of songs I thought sucked. And then I was playing them, I periodically pull those out and play them for my wife, Olivia. And I was playing that for her, and she was like, that one's not trash. Like, keep it. So I kind of rebuilt my relationship with the song.
And how did you do that?
Played it more, you know, sung it more as I took walks and stuff. Showed it to Lester and was like, you know, what do you think of this, man? Lester didn't veto it, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the album, there's some really nice trumpet fills on that song.
Yeah, that's Chris Rose, a great trumpet player who used to live in the Valley. Uh-huh. He's now in Chicago, just finishing up his master's in trumpet.
Oh.
Yeah, so a friend of mine plays great trumpet. He's got the tone, man.
When you're traveling around, are you traveling solo pretty much or with Lester in Colorado? Or
it's variable. So, depending on where I am and who else is game for collaborating. Sometimes it's Lester. Other times it's my friend Sam Moss, who lives out in Boston. Other times it's Hoot and Holler, which is an Asheville-based band. And then, you know, Lizzie Plotkin is a musician from Crested Butte. Yeah. She's awesome. We just did a tour together. Lester was on that too. Mm-hmm. Whoever's game and we have a good time.
It's true.
Get closer to the mic so they can hear how witty you are.
That 0.5 wit.
Yeah, there you go.
Inimitable. That's what I call it.
You do know me.
But, you know, I know enough to know that your modesty becomes you.
You'll get over that.
That's funny. I think we just got a new CD from Sam Moss.
I bet you did. It just came out today.
Did it?
Neon. Yeah, it's really great.
I haven't had a chance to hear it yet, but. Well, it's right behind me on the current month shelf.
I hope you can make time for it. He's an awesome musician.
Yeah.
He and I are on the same record label, which he founded out of Boston.
So now with Jukebox here, this new CD of yours, it sounds like you're kind of going the whole route, radio promotion. You've hired a company to do that for you. Are you working to non-com radio specifically around the country? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I can tell you more about that. I can tell you that I know way less about radio than you. So I see like radio promotion and I'm like, that's a thing that I know I need from talking to other musicians. But the details of it, I'm still learning. Mm-hmm. So I'm working with a company called Hearth Music and Devin out of Seattle. Mm-hmm. And they've worked on some other releases that I really admire and with other artists that I believe in. And he and I were connected a few years ago because he was writing reviews of music and wrote some of an old band I was in, the Howling Kettles, with Sam Moss. So when I reached out to him, you know, he kind of had an in for working together. And I did do a Kickstarter to fundraise for the project. And I'm so grateful that went well. And, you know, I'm able to do this.
Well, I saw that you made $18,000 on that Kickstarter campaign.
Well, that's the number that was handed to me, but it really just goes out the door to other people.
Well, sure. But it gets you something that you didn't have before.
Yeah, it was huge. Important. It was huge. Yeah. I'm like, I can't believe it. Like, people just showed up for me in a way that is astounding.
Uh-huh.
So I'm grateful.
You know, Kickstarter and similar things, it's a really great concept that seems to have worked for a lot of different artists and different kinds of artists.
Yeah, it's cool. The thing that I think is cool about it is you used to have to find a record label, which is just really code for like a bank who's going to invest in you.
Yeah.
And now you can still do that. People still do that. But really, that record label is going to turn around and sell the stuff to people who like you and like your music. So you're kind of cutting out the middleman and just having people who already are into you invest in your project. And I think that that's really cool and pretty empowering as an independent musician.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, just points out how important it is, the live music aspect, the touring, the finding your audience is still pretty critical.
Yeah. It's huge. I mean, yeah, this music's not for everyone. It's just for the people who are going to dig it.
Yeah.
And it's been really cool to travel around and just get to know people who like the songs or are curious about them and then grow to like the songs. Mm-hmm. People are just so welcoming and generous in a way that I think like shows me the best sides of people around the country. So I'm really happy to be in a position to see that through music. I wouldn't get to do it, I think, if I didn't play guitar and make stuff up.
Well, I think now might be the time to play a tune from the CD. How about Making Eggs?
Okay.
Do you like that one?
Yeah.
All right.
I love that song.
Making Eggs from Jackson Emmer's brand new CD Jukebox here on Express Yourself.
I bet you know that person who woke up in second grade. I know what I'm doing with my life and all the day. They often study Latin, foreign policy and Kant. Color-coded planners, man, they work for what they want. Oh, dang. So self-assured, they plan their life and death just as soon as they are born. Oh dang, I'm on the skids. You woke up and changed the world while I'm just making eggs. Some folks work for paychecks, some just work for love. I'm stuck in the middle, counting singles, stacking ones. Their brains are always turning like the hands of grandpa's clock, inching towards a grand design. They know just what they want. Oh dang, so self-assured. They plan their life and death just as soon as they are born. Oh dang, I'm on the skids. You woke up and changed the world while I'm just making eggs. You woke up and changed the world while I'm just making eggs. Tiburon to Texas, I've seen some things, I guess. Some folks have the fire, some folks are just a mess. Don't let it bring you down, don't let it break your yoke. Better living as an ember than to just go up in smoke. Oh dang, so self-assured. They plan their life and death just as soon as they are born. Oh dang, I'm on the skids. You woke up and changed the world while I'm just making eggs. You woke up and changed the world, oh, while I'm just
just all the little details, how your voice kind of goes up in register there at the very end, and everybody's out there changing the world, and I'm just making eggs.
Some people get up so early and just rock the world, and I'm, you know, some days I feel that way, but most days I'm just like, man, how am I going to keep this going? So my hat is off to the people who wake up the first way. Just, yeah.
Takes all kinds.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Hey, I'd like to hear another tune before we have to slip out of here.
Okay. Well, I want to play a song that I wrote with my friend John Lilly out in West Virginia. Great honky-tonk songwriter. He's got a project called Blue Yonder. But yeah, check out his music. He's great. And we wrote this song, Dreamers and Fools, together.
Jackson Emmer live in the studio with Lester Price and playing tonight at Steve's Guitars.
See y'all at Steve's, 8:30. Someone else is opening, Abigail Rose?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know much about them yet because the other Abigail Rose shows up when you Google them. So I think this is somebody else. But they'll be great. Please come.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Luke.
Thank you.
She plays the guitar, writes her own songs. Kids and her girlfriends, they all sing along. She'll be on the Opry before very long. Thank God for dreamers and fools. Thank God for dreamers and fools like you and me, hopeless romantics. Why all I'd wanna be is taking their chances, breaking the rules. Thank God for dreamers and fools. For 35 years he had managed the store. Then he got fired, then got a divorce. Now he's moving to Fiji and buying a horse. Thank God for dreamers and fools. Thank God for dreamers and fools like you and me, hopeless romantics. Why all I'd wanna be is taking their chances, breaking the rules. Thank God for dreamers and fools. A dachshund and she a great dane. How they will manage is hard to explain. But where there's a will, there's always a way. Thank God for dreamers and fools. Thank God for dreamers and fools like you and me, hopeless romantics. Why all that wannabes taking their chances, breaking the rules. Thank God for dreamers and fools. Yeah, thank God for dreamers and fools. Yes, thank God for dreamers and fools.
Another sweet tune from Jackson Emmer. With a little help from Lester Price. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Luke.
Hey,
thank you for having us.
Did I see on your website that you're opening Mountain Fair this year?
I am opening Mountain Fair.
Congratulations.
Lester will be there,
knew?
Too.
Yes. Nice.
We are happy and excited and grateful.
Yeah.
Be there or be square.
Yeah, that's a great gig. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're pumped.
Another great gig is tonight over at Steve's Guitars.
Come Yay. On out.
Come on down.
Thanks,
on
everybody, down. For listening, and Luke, especially, for supporting live music.
You got it, brother.
You're Thank very you. Kind. Thank you so
Both
much.
Both of you are, too. Thanks for listening, and please feel free to go out there and express yourself. Let's go out with some wise words from Los Lobos, who play the Wheeler Opera House tonight.